Hey, here we go. Back in the old comfy chair, right where we belong. Reggie, the producer, how you doing, sir? Thumbs up. Very good. All right. The levels look fine today. They look extra fine. I think it's going to be a great sounding podcast. All right. Well, let's get down to it here then. Put it in the books. Episode 221. I will give the three S's, and then I will give the countdown, and we will create podcast magic, per usual. All right, sir? Here we go. Star, smile, strong. All right, ready? Reggie, ready? Yeah? Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Wherever you go to download or listen, we are there. So, subscribe to that format, rate this podcast, but most importantly, tell your friends. Let them know that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And why the heck isn't it there? So send them a link, or send them a message, or send the good vibes over that they should be listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic just like you do every week. 1 hour. That's all I ask. That's not too much. And you can't beat the price, can you? Especially in today's gouging world. Free as usual. And your efforts and your loyalty and your devotion to this podcast are much appreciated. If you like what you're hearing for the first time or the 221st time, then you might want to hear some of those older podcasts we have. They're all there at WGNRadio.com. You just go in and look to the Elton Jim Captain Podtastic prompt, and there you will find all previous 220 episodes. I'm going to pull my calculator out, but I'm just going to guess and say that that makes this episode 221. And welcome. So, what I wanted to talk about today was an interesting outing that I recently had. No, not that one. No, not that kind of an outing. No, an outing out into the real world. Because, you know, we have been pretty much in a quarantined situation here since March. And obviously, many people have used the recent loosening of many of the restrictions to go out and socialize as much as they could. Others, like me, have decided to remain still quarantined for the most part. Certainly have gone out for essentials to the grocery store. I have expanded a bit for some other what I would call essentials, which have been a haircut. It certainly wasn't essential. Wow, that was a raggedy time. Wasn't between March and June a raggedy time for everybody? I didn't necessarily like it very much. I wouldn't have been a good hippie, at least visually. And my hair didn't really... I usually keep my hair relatively short. I mean, not shaved or any way, but shorter. And for the most part, the sides of my hair just got just really shabby and ragged. There was no nice bounce or wave or flow to it. It was just kind of haphazard. I had to chop away at wings that were developing in the back and sticking out around my neck or behind my ear. Or it was okay. It was good to get the haircut the first time. It was nice to get sort of back in order. And so I've gotten a haircut. I have even gone to the dentist. I mentioned that. I have gone to the dentist. I had a teeth cleaning. And that felt good as well. It was, you know, everybody has been hopefully, keeping up with their hygiene. Maybe not as regularly. Maybe you don't shower every day like you used to. But my teeth, it had been a while since I'd gone to the dentist. And the funny thing is, when going to the dentist, it actually seemed more risky for the dental hygienist than for me, because I was there with my mouth open, breathing, right? And she was right in the, ground zero area. So certainly they were taking every precaution with masks and shields and gloves and everything. So I didn't feel too risky by doing that for myself to get COVID, and I knew that I didn't have it. So, yeah, it was initially a little like, wow, am I really going to do this? But once I got there, it seemed like everything was being handled in a safe way, in a very, conscientious way, and it was no problem. But aside from that, I mean, that's all we've done since March. You know, for the most part, we have stayed home during the day and in the evening. We go out into the yard and spend time there. Thankfully, we have a nice little patio and a fire pit that we built 10 years ago that has come in very handy during this period. But that's been it. We've talked to neighbors, over the fence or, occasionally, but have not had any real visitors. Oh, I shouldn't say that. My wife's mother came over back in mid-June. For the afternoon, a few hours in the yard, outside, with masks and distanced. But aside from that, that's been it. So we have stayed pretty close to the original quarantine orders and intend to, at least until, things look better on the COVID front or there is a vaccine, which I guess is really the true game changer here. Social distancing can help mitigate, but it can't change the game. The vaccine is going to change the game. But we did, I guess, sort of socialize with the bigger picture. We have not gone to restaurants. We have not gone to bars or any of the kind of that socializing. But what we did do was something that we wanted to do right before the original shutdown in March happened. My wife and I have traveled quite a bit over the time that we've been together. We've been to some really exciting and great places, memorable places, all throughout the world. And one thing we enjoy quite a bit is going to art museums. And we luckily have been to some of the most famous art museums in the world that have had some of the world's greatest art treasures. We've been to the Louvre in Paris, and we've been to the Prado in Madrid, and we've been to the Uffizi Gallery in Italy, and we've been to the Tate and the National Gallery and the Albert and Victoria Museums in London. Where else have we been? We've been to the Munch Museum in Oslo, and we've been to the Van Gogh Museum in the Netherlands, and we've been to the Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh, and we've been to the Picasso Museum in France, and we've been to Claude Monet's home in France in Giverny, and we've been in museums all around the country, and at the Met and the Guggenheim and the Whitney in New York and the San Francisco Museum and needless to say, we've been to a lot of art museums. We enjoy seeing art, and some of the, you know, the Rodin Museum we've been to. So we've been to quite a lot of museums. And we certainly go to the Chicago Art Institute here, which is one of the country's, if not one of the world's best art museums as well, and has some of the all-time iconic works of art in Chicago. Grant Wood's American Gothic, you know, with the farmer and his daughter with the pitchfork, and some great Picassos like The Old Guitarist, and some amazing Marc Chagall works, including the Marc Chagall windows and the famous Nighthawks by Hopper. You know, that scene of the diner, the 50s diner, that everybody sort of does little takeoffs on. And Surratt's Sunday in the Park, which, you know, is made of all these thousands of dots, that famous scene of everybody looking in the, you know, looking toward the left in the in a French park, the Grand Châtelet. And that's been done many times. We have seen the Mona Lisa. We have seen Michelangelo's David at the in Milan, and the in his Pietà in the Basilica in Saint Peter's Basilica in Rome. And we've also seen the Last Supper, Da Vinci's Last Supper, as well as the Mona Lisa. So we've seen quite a bit of art. We really love art. And so the Chicago Art Institute, right before the shutdown, was having an exhibition of an artist that we discovered more or less by traveling through Europe quite a bit and seeing his art throughout Europe. It's a Greek artist or a Spanish artist. No one really knows too much about his origins, but his nickname, because he was in Spain, but he was Greek, was El Greco. And he's one of our favorite artists. We've seen quite a bit of his work. And so they were having an exhibition at the Art Institute, beginning, I believe, like on March 7th or something, you know. And so we were like, wow, this will be great. Let's go. We're going to go opening weekend on March 7th. Or March 6th, whatever it was, we're going to go see the El Greco exhibition at the Chicago Art Institute first weekend. You know, wow, this is great. Hadn't seen some El Greco in a long time, and this will be a whole exhibition. Very excited. And for whatever reason, my wife wasn't feeling well. There was something going on, and we said, well, we'll go next week. You know, it might be crowded opening weekend. People might be going. Who wants to be with the crowds? Because don't forget, back in March, there were still crowds. There were still people everywhere. So you actually had to worry about things being crowded. You remember those days? That was actually a concern. You actually sometimes made a decision on where you went based on if it would be crowded or not. Imagine that. It wasn't all that long ago, folks. I don't even know if we'll ever be worried about if anything's crowded again. But anyway, so we didn't go. We waited a week. Well, that week turned into 5 months because literally there was no next weekend for the Art Institute and the El Greco exhibition, because the next weekend, everything was closed. By the next weekend, it was closed. So we didn't get to see it and had no idea if it was only supposed to run from like March to September or something, or no, March to June. And so we had no idea if we would ever even see it again, because obviously the Art Institute had been closed, like many other public places here in the Chicago area. And so then when things started to loosen up, they made announcements that the Art Institute indeed would be opening up at the end of July, and they would be offering, they did extend it for a month or so, the El Greco exhibition. So it was enough of a lure. There was enough of a personal lure, and I guess enough of the, you know, kind of cabin fever happening. I'm a staunch quarantinist, and I don't believe in all this socializing out in public places like bars and restaurants. I think you can do without for a while in the course of this. So I hope I'm not too much of a hypocrite, because then what I felt was interesting or important, quote unquote, I did go to, but I didn't go lightly. And it was a one-time kind of thing. It wasn't like I mean, you could always go to a restaurant or a bar, right? I was going to see an event that would not be there much longer. So I guess I'm trying to justify it. And if somebody wanted to argue with me, they'd say, okay, well, you like to go to, you know, art institutes or art museums. I like to go to bars and restaurants. So if you can go there and they had protocols, then I can go to my restaurant. And that's a fair argument. I cannot argue that. That's very true. The only proviso that I would add is that my thing was at an event that wasn't going to be there much longer, whereas your favorite bar and your favorite restaurant is there every Friday and Saturday, or every Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday and Thursday, and you could go 5 days a week if you wanted to. I couldn't go, so I couldn't see this, you know, 4 months down the line. So I guess if I'm going to try to defend my hypocrisy, then we're all hypocrites. We're all hypocrites. And we try to rationalize what we do. And so I'm sitting here trying to rationalize what I did. I guess I could make something of a case, but if somebody wanted to really, you know, put my heels to the fire, I shouldn't have gone. I went to a public place, a major big public place. Yes, it had limited capacity, just like restaurants. Yes, it did have a mask requirement, just like restaurants. And yes, it did have a social distancing requirement, just like bars and restaurants. So I guess you could make the point, okay, Jim, you're a hypocrite, because you're telling me not to go to bars and restaurants, and I could do without. But the minute that there's some art exhibit that you want to see, you run out for the first time in 5 months. And I guess I have to plead guilty. But I'm not running out again. I didn't run out the next weekend to the same exhibition or another big place like bar and restaurant people might. So I think I'm my hypocrisy is noted, but I think also my reasoning should be noted. If there is some hypocrisy police out there, if there's a hypocrisy judge out there, I would still state my case. I would probably still be found guilty, but I might get a suspended sentence. Let's put it that way, okay? So anyway, the fact is, yes, we did go. We did expand our social footprint beyond the essentials, beyond haircuts, beyond grocery shopping, and beyond doctor's appointments. We did extend our social footprint for the first time. Now, but it wasn't to a bar and it wasn't to a restaurant. It was to nourish the soul. Ooh. If I went before the hypocrisy judge, I would have used that argument. Your Honor, yes, I admit I did go out socially. But I did not go to a bar to get drunk or to have alcohol to alter my state of mind. I did not go to a restaurant to gluttonly give in to my appetites for food by going to a restaurant. No, Your Honor. Yes, while I did go out socially, while I did extend my social footprint, Your Honor, I would like to make the distinction that I went to a public place, not to imbibe, not to feed, but to nourish, Your Honor, to nourish, and not to nourish my body, but to nourish my soul by looking at art. And I rest my case and put myself at your mercy, Your Honor, in the hypocrisy court. I think I'd have a good case. I think I might have appealed to a little sentimentality there, but who knows? Anyway, we did extend our social footprint. So we drove down, and now here's something I had never. So I just this was so funny. We've gone out, right? We've gone to art institutes and public places, you know, your whole life, right? But this so much about this felt like virgin territory, like we'd never done it before. And it really, it had been 5 months. It almost felt like you forgot how to go out. And then we were encountering some new things that we hadn't seen, things that had changed. Now, if you listen on a regular basis to this podcast, or you've heard me on the radio, you know I am notoriously not anti-technology, but I don't freely use all the apps that are at my disposal because I have a flip phone and I can't use a lot of the apps. Now, there is one app that, now my wife has a smartphone. So yes, I do indulge in apps. I have used the GPS and I've talked about how great an app that is. I have used apps. They're just not on my phone, but I have received the benefit of different smartphone apps. Okay. So I'm not completely against them. I just, you know, I don't consume my life with them. I only use the apps that I think are important. I use the apps I need, not just the apps that I want or the apps everyone else has. I like an app that actually has something that I really need to use, not just as entertainment, but as a real use. So GPS, yes, very useful. Well, I've been told about this one app many times, but once again, without having a smartphone, I can't use it. Something called Spot Hero. Have you heard of this? People go, have I heard of it? Of course, it's 900 years old, you caveman. well, it's new to me. I'd heard about it, never used it. So we're going to go down to the Art Institute, and it's not easy to park down there, especially there's parking restrictions, and there is a lot of underground parking lots. And the last time we went to the Art Institute, we went in one of the underground parking lots, and to find our way out and up and in was another 25-minute walk. We got lost. We couldn't find the car. It was a mess. So I said, I'd rather use one of the on-street, right off the street parking lots, parking garages, that is right, there's got to be one that's right across the street from the Art Institute, because I remembered it being there. And so my wife said, well, why don't we use Spot Hero? And I, at first, of course, bristled at the idea of using an app. But then she said, first of all, we can reserve a spot. Secondly, it's cheaper. And if anybody has ever parked downtown Chicago, you know how much parking can be. And I'm sure that for the time that we're going to be, this is going to be at least a $25 or $30 parking charge. Well, Spot Hero not only reserved us a spot in the garage that I wanted, which is right across the street, away from the crowds and away from the underground menagerie that we got lost in the last time. And it was half the price. Reserved, half the price, easy access. Wow. Okay, that's an app that I can get my head around. That's an app that is useful. It's not just there because we can do it. It's because we need to do it. And that I'm a new Spot Hero fan. I can't access it myself, but I certainly will be using it more often when I'm with my wife and we are parking somewhere. So kudos to the people at Spot Hero. Nice job. Oh my gosh, that time that I drove down into what is called the Millennial Park Underground Garage, and it's huge because it's there to serve the people that are going to be going not only to Millennial Park downtown, which is right across the street from the Art Institute on Michigan Avenue, but you know, people going to the Art Institute, people just going downtown to walk up and down Michigan Avenue. So it's a huge, huge underground park area. And when we went, it was crowded, which the first time back in, you know, I think January we had been there because we went to, or no, no, November, we went to see an Andy Warhol exhibit at the Art Institute. So, you know, not only is it huge and you're making left turns and right turns and going up and going down, and we finally just found an exit, and this thing let us out like on the other side of the park on some door that just didn't even seem like it went anywhere. It left us out where we weren't even on a sidewalk. It was crazy. We were walking on a major street, Columbus Drive, that we weren't even on a sidewalk. We were just kind of walking in dirt or something and jumping down. Oh, it was crazy. I don't even know if the exit that we used was a public exit. It may have been like an emergency exit. It was crazy. We walked way out of our way. Then on the way back, we got totally lost to find the car. I'm not exaggerating. It took at least 25 minutes to find our car. And I don't even know how we did. I never would have, my wife guided us back. I never would have gone down this one kind of, you know, walkway or tunnel that she said, wait, let's try this one. I never would have. I said, I protested. It is not down there. It is not down there. I don't know where it is, but I know it's not down there. Well, it was down there. But I was so turned around completely. So that's why I said, let's find a parking garage that, you know, is not this, you know, this maze from The Shining. Danny, Google The Shining. No, this one was right on a street on Monroe. You walk out, there's the street, there's the Art Institute. So hooray for Spot Hero. So for my wife, she's been working from home. I've been doing most of the groceries, and while she's gone out for a few times, once again for haircuts, and she also went to the dentist. It's mostly within, you know, a couple of miles of our home. She works downtown, and she has not been downtown since March 9th. She's been working at home even before the official lockdown started. So this was the first time that she had been downtown since March, and pretty much, you know, this far from home. She really has been quarantined, even more than I have. And I've felt quarantined, and she's even been more quarantined. So we're driving down the expressway, and she's like, wow, this has been the first time that I've driven down this. And she drives to work, and she's like, this just seems kind of foreign to me, even though it was a route that she's taken every day for, you know, many, many years. So that was new. I've come down to the WGN radio station a few times, and that's been my other kind of indulgence. But once again, that's an essential. But most of the times that I've done that, it's been on a weekend or overnight. So it's really never felt like you've been out during the day or when people would be out. You know, it's kind of desolate when I've gone, even on the highway. But even this was strange. It was a Saturday afternoon, and it wasn't very busy going downtown. So right off the bat, it felt a little odd. She noted how strange it was just to be, you know, this far from home, which is not all that far, really. But just going back downtown. So we got into Spot Hero. Everything worked perfectly. Got our spot, you know, got out. There it is. No problem. And the first interesting observance when we got onto Michigan Avenue, one of the, you know, the main drag, I would say, right in the Chicago downtown area. Now, granted, it was early. It was about, 9:30, quarter to 10, but it was very eerie. It was empty. And this was a beautiful Saturday morning. Going to be a beautiful day, not a cloud in the sky. Upper 80s. I mean, this was a classic Chicago summer day. One that in a normal time, the area that we were in, even at that time, would have been pretty jammed with tourists heading off to Millennium Park or possibly, to the Art Institute and other attractions in that area. there would have been a lot of joggers and bicyclers and people going to the parks and people going to the lake. I mean, it really would have just been, even at that time, on a Saturday morning, as beautiful as that day was, it would have been jammed even at, you know, 9:45, 10:00. And so that was the first kind of, this isn't Kansas anymore, Dorothy. Observation was, wow, it's a little eerie here now. And that was the first, and it's been eerie, right? In your neighborhoods and stuff like that, on your street, you know. But here was an area that I've been to throughout my life that's always, it's defined by being crowded. And here it was just desolate. Not completely, but certainly far, far, far less crowded than I'd ever seen it. And there was a calm and a peacefulness. It was great. It was nice. It was just like the ultimate in solitude. It's the way that the park and the lakefront is meant to look and designed to be experienced, but you rarely get that opportunity because it's also filled with people because everyone wants to experience it. And yet here, I don't know how much you've ventured out of your homes and gone to places like this, these crowded kind of public places, not bars, not restaurants. I mean, you know, kind of touristy kind of places or just places in the city that, but whether it's parks or big kind of museum kind of places or just major cities that streets that have big buildings or shops and stores that would normally just be bustling with people. But here, the Chicago Lakefront is, you know, one of the city's, if not the country's, most beautiful areas to just look at and indulge. And it was even more impressive because it was so quiet and it was so empty. It looked like it would, you know, in the artist's rendering. The artist rendering always looks great until it's jammed with people. But this, the people were just specks. So it was actually kind of nice to go there and not see it jammed with people. You really got more of appreciation for the area and all of its. And I noticed a lot more things. I noticed more buildings and more flower and garden areas and more statues and more fountains. I noticed more of that whole area that I was in, an area that I'd seen throughout my life, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of times. I've lived here all my life, but I really saw it for the first time and experienced it in a completely new way because of the lack of people. So if COVID has done anything, it's created some organic solitude. So if you are willing to extend your social footprint, I would recommend going to these places or going to public outdoor places that have always been crowded and going to them now and looking at them and experiencing them in a whole different way. So it was actually pretty cool. It was quiet. There wasn't a lot of traffic. I mean, Michigan Avenue filled always with cars and cabs and honking horns, especially on a Saturday. There was hardly any traffic. So you didn't hear the ignition of cars or of engines running. And beautiful sky. It really was a unique experience in a place that I've been to many times. You'd never think you could regain your virginity, but I sort of did. And so that was the first observation that, wow, this is actually kind of cool. And wow, it's actually more beautiful than I've ever seen it before. I don't know how much longer that's going to last. So, you know, you might as well take advantage of that. Once again, we had our masks on, we did social distance, and that's another observation I made. I was very happy to see, while there were not a lot of people, most of the people walking downtown had masks on. And I was very impressed by that, because you should by this time know my feeling on masks. I think we should be wearing them. I don't even think there needs to be a mandatory order. I think wearing masks just makes sense for right now. It shows that you're concerned about yourself, and more importantly, it shows that you're concerned about your fellow man and about this situation. It's not a political statement. It's just a necessary precaution during a very odd time. And I don't see why that is controversial. But I was impressed because I have driven through many suburbs over the last 5 months, and I don't see one mask anywhere. And so here I was impressed that here I'm in downtown Chicago, where you'd think, you know, it's just, you know, whatever. And I saw 99% of the people wearing masks. Even the people jogging were wearing masks. People that were walking together in a group, whether they were family or friends, were all wearing masks. So that was impressive. And I actually had a jolt of optimism for the human race, and at least the human race here in the United States, because obviously we've done a miserable job of mitigating and containing the coronavirus, because people have not been social distancing and not wearing masks. And here, I saw people in downtown Chicago getting with the program. Bravo. So we walk up to the Art Institute. It's got the majestic copper lions, the two lions that sort of stand guard in front of the Art Institute. They've become iconic. A few months ago, they even put big giant masks on the lions, because the lions have become quasi-mascots for the city. When something good happens, they usually decorate the lions with something that pertains to that. If there's a World Series, the Lions will be wearing a Sox hat or a Cubs hat over the last decade. Or when the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, they'll be wearing a hockey helmet or whatever. And someone did put giant masks on the Lions initially when the masks first came in as kind of a sign of solidarity. And so didn't have them on this day. I was a little upset at the masks. I was very at the Lions. I was impressed with the people, but I'm a little disappointed in the Art Institute Lions. Why weren't they masked up? I should write a letter. So we went, and we were waiting. The Art Institute wasn't open yet, so we had to wait. And people were sitting on the stairs, all in little pockets, with their group of two or three. They were all in little pockets. Everybody was social distanced. When we were told to line up, everybody more or less was 6 feet apart or so, at least. But you know, everybody had their back to one another. So, you know, at least you weren't exposed to their people's faces, and everyone had a mask because you needed a mask to get in. And when we did get entry, once again, the social distancing was on the honor system, but they did have 25% capacity, so it certainly was easy to be social distance. I tell you, the main reason we went to the Art Institute, not only was it because of the El Greco exhibition we wanted to see, but also the way to rationalize it as well was, well, for a public place, to go to a public place, which you're obviously opening yourself up to now, you know, more risk because you're, you know, exposing yourself to people that, you know, you don't know and who knows where they've been. But at least in a museum, I could rationalize to say, if I wear my mask and they have limited capacity, it is very easy to remain social distanced in a museum, in those kind of within that environment. So that was another reason. It wasn't just pure, I want to see this art. It was that if I go there, yes, I want to see the art. That's why I'm going. But I could also say that just like when I went to the dentist, that the correct protocols are in place and that they can be adhered to. You know, restaurants say, oh, yeah, we have all the protocols in place, but there's still people everywhere. In a bar, there's still people everywhere. And we're seeing that those are the places where the COVID is you know, is spreading, and people are more likely to break the rules in those kind of places. I felt that the people that would be attending an art exhibit would probably stay within the rules. And even the environment created would make it much easier and almost natural to stay. When you're at an art museum, you don't huddle unless you're at the Louvre trying to see the Mona Lisa. You're always on your own. You're by yourself with your own group. You're not shoulder to shoulder. And if they've limited the capacity, you certainly wouldn't be shoulder to shoulder. And that's exactly how it was. So I felt that the protocols they put in place made me feel safe with masks, social distancing. No problem. And we got to experience, you know, some great art. We walked in, and that's the way where they were very diligent in terms of how many people they were letting in at a time. And once you were in line, you had a certain time to wait, 10 minutes, and then you'll be allowed in. And then once you were in, you were free to walk throughout the museum. But as I said, because there was limited capacity, the chances of you, being in a big group were almost nil. And it was up to you. You know, yes, there were doors to open with your hands and railings you may have touched, but there was a lot of sanitizer around as well. So I think they did a very good job of creating a very safe environment, and one that you were confident in that you could go there and go in and come out safe. And in fact, my wife had a medical procedure done this past week, and she had to have a COVID test taken. I have not yet taken a COVID test. I've never had any symptoms, but she had a COVID test and it turned out negative. So obviously the exposure that we had at the Art Museum, Art Institute in Chicago, caused us no harm. So we stayed within the rules, and they created a good set of rules. It can work, folks. It can. We were proof positive if both sides play by the rules. And that's unfortunately what hasn't been happening. But if you do, it can work. All this stuff they're telling you can work. And it's not infringing on your freedom. Unless you decide it is. Which is completely subjective. But that's another argument. Anyway. So when we walked in, we were able to, go freely. We saw the El Greco exhibition. It was excellent. Saw some paintings that we had never seen before. Learned some things about him that we'd never learned before. And then we went and explored the rest of the museum, as I said, which has some great works by some of the world's greatest artists, like Van Gogh and Renoir, and said, you know, some modern artists like Salvador Dali and Andy Warhol. So it's certainly, if you're a museum lover, the Chicago Art Institute, if you've ever been there, you know, Picasso, it's got its share of impressive works and some iconic works, as I mentioned before, Seurat's Sunday in the Park and Hopper's Nighthawks and things by Turner, and it's Chagall. It's very impressive, no question. Some Magritte, if you're into surrealism. So we spent 3 hours total at the museum. 3 hours, and I'll have to say, folks, we never took our masks off in 3 hours. Okay, so yeah. Was it a little warm? Was there a time when, for a second, you kind of lowered it down over your nose just to get a little breath? Certainly. When I was all alone, I did that. But we wore our masks indoors for 3 hours. So, yes, it is possible. And no, it wasn't a tremendous sacrifice. I didn't feel that I was giving up any of my First Amendment rights, and I didn't feel as if I was making some huge sacrifice that was so terrible that I couldn't take it anymore. Was it ideal? Certainly not. Would I have preferred to have been walking around the Art Institute for 3 hours without a mask on? Certainly. Were there times where it felt a little warm? Definitely. But was it unbearable? No. Was it necessary? Yes. Was it a supreme sacrifice? No. It was a necessary sacrifice. And we did it. And yes, I won't lie to you. When we got out of there and got back to our car, we could not wait to take off those masks. Okay? So I'm not saying like, oh, and then I wore it for 3 hours later. No, no. As soon as we got in the car, I tore that thing off as fast as I could and took in several deep breaths. Not that the parking garage's oxygen was all that great smelling, but it certainly was refreshing. Even if it was smelled like a parking lot with some exhaust in it, it was great to breathe in some quote unquote fresh air. So I'm not denying that, but at the same time, wasn't impossible either. Wasn't some amazing output, you know, off-putting thing that was against my constitutional rights and my personal freedoms and everything else that's been thrown. It was a necessary, yeah, I'll even use it. It was a necessary evil even. But it was necessary, and we did it, and you can do it too. Now, the funny thing that was that, so we went throughout the whole place. There was not a lot of anemones. That's how Ernest T. Bass says it. Where's me anemones? There weren't that many amenities open at the, restaurants, and there were some, there weren't, every bathroom wasn't open. There was only one gift shop. So it was a little restricted there too. But once again, you're there to see the art, and that's why you went. But what was interesting was it really, I mean, I've been in a few elevators, as I said, going to the WGN studios, but mostly on weekends and off hours when there's no one else practically even in the building, and certainly no one else riding the elevators. And here on this Saturday morning, when we had to go into the elevator to go up and down from where we parked our car, no one in the elevator. Now, it was nice, too, I should say, at the Art Institute. Not only were you social distance as you're walking around, but, you know, they have, places to sit there and benches. And they had arrows, the one-way directionals to walk. And then they also had places to sit that were socially distanced on the benches. So if you sat on that spot and the other person sat on their spot, you were social distance. So as I said, they did a nice job. But the most interesting kind of institutionalized social distancing addition was when we saw that we walked into the elevators at the parking garage. We'd never encountered anybody in the elevator with us, so there was no problems there. But what I found funny was on the floor in the elevator, I'm not sure if you've been in elevators or not since this has, things has loosened and most public places have added a lot of social distancing directives and guidelines for you to follow when you go into them. And elevators are obviously one, especially in an office building. And I assume that, on a Monday, I think most people aren't in offices. So I'm not even sure how, crowded they may be at this time, even on a weekday, but the buildings certainly have to provide them. And so we walk into the elevator, and there's arrows in the elevator pointing in each corner where you should stand. So I'm assuming then that maybe, like, say, on a weekday when if the office is open, if the office's buildings are open and people are going in any numbers, apparently it looks like by what is in the elevator that no more than four people can even ride the elevator. And there's only four arrows, four spots in each corner that they're telling you where you should stand. And so what's so interesting is that each of the arrows, I mean, they all point toward a wall or toward a corner. So if there were four people in this elevator and we're going up from the bottom floor to the 20th or the 30th or the 80th. We're going to be on this elevator for a while. All four people would be standing with their backs to one another, facing a wall. Now, I think I've even talked about how sometimes it can be claustrophobic and kind of odd when you're in an elevator, especially with other people. Everybody sort of stares at the numbers and looks around. They don't know where to look. Everybody's kind of, you know, socially awkward. You don't know where to look, where to stand. Well, now you are told where to stand and you are told where to look. There is no question. You don't have to feel, but it is just as socially awkward. It's just that you don't have to feel bad about it now or embarrassed if you follow these directions, because they've got people, at least supposedly, if there's other people that you don't know, in an elevator in each of the corners of the elevator, four people, and each person is standing with their backs to one another facing a wall. Remember when you were in school? I certainly remember this. When you were, especially in grammar school, and depending on the high school you went to, even in my high school, I went to a Christian Brothers high school that was very strict. And so, you know, if you were fooling around or talking too much, and I usually got in trouble for talking too much, surprise, surprise. or if you were, you know, doing something wrong, the teacher would say, stand in the corner. Remember that? And if it wasn't you, you certainly saw some people that got punished and had to stand in the corner for the rest of the class. And basically, they had their back to the rest of the class looking at a wall. Well, that's exactly what we have to do now, I think, when we get an elevator. It's almost like we're back in grammar school and we've been punished and we're standing in the corner facing the wall. I would love to see. It was just my wife and me, so it didn't matter. We weren't doing it because we don't need to social distance from each other. But if there was another person on that elevator, just one, then I would have felt obligated to go in that corner. Even if I had a mask, I would have gone into my corner, followed my arrow, and stared at the wall. Now here's a question that I didn't think of until right now. If I'm the guy staring at the back wall, how do I know when my floor has been reached? I never thought of that until right now. There is somebody who is standing with their back to the numbers as they click by on the elevator. So if there are four people, I mean, you have to, someone has to, if someone's facing it, and I don't know, at least they could take a look over and say, okay, we're at 12. Okay, then I guess I'm the next one, because you might miss your floor. Yes, you might save yourself from COVID. You may socially distance, but you may never get to your destination. You may ride the elevator for 8 hours because you can't see the number. But I almost was wishing that somebody was going to come into the elevator, because I would have liked to have reverted back to my grammar school and high school days of standing in the corner looking at the wall. But that's one of the new things. And I'm wondering, that may be one of the things that stays with us for a long time. So when you, if you haven't gone out into the big world yet, if you haven't extended your social footprint to go into a public elevator, take a look the next time. I bet you they're going to have those four arrows. If there's other people in there with you, if you're going to play by the rules, you've got to go in your corner and look at your wall. Well, we got out of the elevator and we got back into our car and Spot Hero got us in and out with no problem. And sure enough, we just drove around a little just to take a look. Well, actually, I should say that. When we left the Art Institute, we went across the street and we wanted to go in to see Millennium Park. Been a long time since I've been there, especially now, and we just figured it was a beautiful day. Well, let's just take a walk through the park. Well, I'll have to tell you, that was probably the most eerie of all of them. Once again, yes, you got a chance to observe the park, but unlike, a lake shore or, a cityscape of buildings that are just kind of naturally there, you know, parks are made for people. It's a place to congregate. It's a place that draws people in. That those other areas I was telling you about at the beginning of the podcast about experiencing them for the first time, those are, you know, the lakefront is there. The view is there. The buildings of the skyscrapers, you know, and you know, the landscape and the skyscapes, those are there, and you can appreciate them for what they are. But a park is designed specifically to draw people in, to be crowded, to be a place where people gather. And it was very desolate. We got out of, no, forget, we got out of the Art Institute at 1 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, 88 degrees. Okay, this is, as I said before, this is a classic summer day. This is a time when that park, Millennium Park, would be filled with tourists, filled with locals. They'd have the fountains on, kids and parents would be splashing around in there. People would be by the Cloud Gate, or the Bean as it's called. People would be walking through the gardens. People would be walking through Maggie Daly Park. People would be walking on the bridge that goes through Millennium Park. It would be jammed with people. There's an outdoor restaurant there. There's benches. There's people would be skateboarding, and people would be jogging, and people would be, I mean, it would just be filled with all types and kinds of people doing all types and kinds of things. And we walked in there. I'm not even sure we're supposed to go in there. In fact, we kind of snuck in through a barricade that was open. And we walked in, and there were a handful of people. No water on the fountains, no kids playing. People were standing in the fountains taking a picture with no water, no screaming kids, no running kids, no bicyclers, no skateboarders, no joggers, no lovers on the grass, nobody sitting on a park bench just observing. And it was so desolate and so unpark-like that instead of enjoying it for its serenity, like I did the views that we had of the downtown area earlier in the day, this was a little depressing. This was a little too strange. And this was just a little off-putting, to the point where as we looked around, we weren't about three quarters into the park. We weren't right totally in the middle. But we looked around at each other, my wife and I, and we just kind of said, we don't need to stay. And that was really kind of sad. And we left, and we went to the parking lot, and we got in the car. But it was just eerie. It was a little unsettling. It was a little sad, but it also reminded me how serious this is and why we do want this to end quickly. I mean, I don't go to Millennium Park every weekend, but some people do, and it should be a place filled with people. It should be a place filled with interesting, you know, activities and fun, and it wasn't. And that's because of COVID, and that's because we have not done a good job of mitigating. That park might have been open, and it may have been allowed to have more people around it if we had done a better job. So it really did send the message to me. While I was depressed and kind of sad at the reality of it, it also made me even more determined to do at least what I can to get this over with, because that park should be filled with people. It should be a place of fun and wonder and escapism and diversion. And it wasn't. So I'm not mad at COVID for that. I just want it to be over with. I'm mad at us for extending it. That's what made me mad. Because maybe if we hadn't done such a bad job, maybe that would have been open. So we got back in our car, we took our masks off, and we drove back home. And I have to tell you, we didn't jog. You know, I don't know how many steps we did. We didn't count our steps. We probably got for 3 hours walking around the Art Institute. We certainly got our steps in. But I have to say, we didn't jog. We didn't, you know, We just walked around, walked upstairs, walked around there. We were beat. It had been a long time since we had been on our feet for that long, extended period of time. And once again, it just showed you the toll that this quarantine had taken. We've been active. We've walked around. We've done around, you know, things around the house and things in the yard. But we hadn't been on our feet for 3 hours at a time, and we hadn't walked as much as we did in that one day. And it was like, wow, that was a full day. It was only 1 p.m. But it just goes to show you how your body gets used to it. So, yes, we extended our footprint. We had a good time. We had a full day. It was great to nourish the soul. It was great to have some aches and pains in some of your leg muscles and stuff. And I look forward to those days moving forward when we can continue to have those aches and pains, and suddenly those aches and pains goes away because you're used to it. But for the first time, extending my footprint, I felt nourished, you know, emotionally, and I felt invigorated physically, and I felt safe going out in public, really, for the first time, at least I felt. So what I would pass on to you is, you know, there is a way to do this. Pick your spots. Pick a place that is naturally not crowded, that is also in, you know, put in safe social distance protocols, and a place that you enjoy. And if you have those three ingredients, I guarantee you, you'll be safe. You'll feel safe. And maybe for the first time in a long time, you'll actually feel like you're having a little fun. Don't forget, wash your hands, and please, mask up. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever your favorite podcast lives and where you download it. We're there. So subscribe to that platform and rate this podcast. But most importantly, tell your friends. Send them a link. Send them a message. Your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Why isn't it theirs? Good question. Your loyalty and your devotion to this podcast is much appreciated. I certainly enjoy doing it every week just because of you. I hope you enjoyed episode 221. I'm Elton Jim. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.